In the 60s, British bands like Cream started covering old blues tunes like Robert Johnson's Crossroads, and Americans started rediscovering this great old musical tradition. It's a process that's still going on. In 1995, the famed illustrator R. Crumb issued a set of trading cards called Heroes of the Blues. It had 36 portraits in Crumb's inimitable style, and on the back of each one was a short bio. Now, the award-winning artist and designer William Stout has taken that idea and run with it. His book is called Legends of the Blues, an illustrated guide to 100 of the greatest blues artists in history. William Stout, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, happy to be here.
So you obviously knew the R. Crumb set, the cards, Heroes of the Blues. What gave you the idea that there should be more? Much more after that.
Lots more. Well, it was 2003. It was the year of the blues. And Shout Factory decided to put out best of collections of some of the top blues artists. And they approached Robert Crumb and licensed his Heroes of the Blues trading cards to be the CD covers. But there are a few artists that Robert didn't do, like Ma Rainey and Mississippi Fred McDowell. And he didn't want to do any more. So Shout approached me and asked if I would work in the same format and do those musicians. Mm-hmm. I agreed to do it, and I didn't realize how fun it was going to be, and I couldn't stop. I did Robert Johnson next just for myself, and then I was recovering from some surgery, and I can't just sit around, so I started drawing more, and I made a big list of everyone that Robert hadn't drawn, and before I knew it, I had 50 portraits.
Wow. On your way to 100 in the book, you're a pretty accomplished illustrator. How much of this kind of illustration, you know, portraits or almost caricatures at times, had you done prior to this?
Well, you know, it's funny. I put myself through art school painting watercolor portraits at Disneyland. I was doing about 80 portraits a day out in Norland Square. So portraiture is no stranger to me. Plus, after that, a big part of my career was doing movie posters where you really had to be able to do likenesses.
Hmm. So with Robert Johnson, that you said that was one of the first ones you did just for yourself. You know,
yes.
We see your drawing of Robert Johnson. There are only a couple of photos that we know are of him, and you've taken one of them as the basis for your portrait. It's him with the hat and the cigarette. But as you look carefully at the pupils of his eyes are, in fact, skulls. So there's, you know, there are these little in-jokes that that crop up every now and again.
I wanted to go deeper than just representing a photograph that I found, and I wanted the portraits to tell something about each artist. So there are visual references to either their music or to their life. In the case of Robert Johnson, his very short life with the skulls in his eyes.
Robert Johnson, surprisingly, was available to you because he wasn't part of R. Crumb's original set of Heroes of the Blues. But there were two artists that Crumb covered that you just couldn't leave out of this book, right?
Oh, they're just too important to me. That's Blind Willie Johnson and Skip James. Blind Willie Johnson, he recorded the song Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground, which is one of the songs that is on the Voyager spacecraft.
Yes.
They have 27 samples of
Yes,
27 samples of music, and it was chosen to as an expression of human loneliness. And Ry Cooder, the great guitarist, described this song as the most soulful, transcendent piece in all American music. The other fellow is Skip James, and I love Skip James's music. His singing and his playing is so elegant. And he was in dire straits towards the end of his life, and he desperately needed some medical care that he could not afford, and about that time the first Cream album came out, and it included a song of his, I'm So Glad. And the royalties from that song secured him the health care that he needed to extend his life.
The story is that when the guys from Cream covered his song, they assumed he was long dead, and lots of other people assumed he was long dead, and then there he was, still very much alive in the 1960s. Now, the book Legends of the Blues is dedicated to R. Crumb, Robert Crumb, and to Willie Dixon. Out of all the great blues artists, why him?
Willie Dixon is the author of the great American Blues Songbook. Almost every English band, English blues and rhythm and blues band that recorded, recorded his music. It's his songs that he wrote for the chess table of artists, that he wrote for Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter, Sonny Boy Williamson, and Chuck, well, he didn't write for Chuck Berry, but those guys, almost all of their hits were written by Willie Dixon. He's a pretty astounding guy.
Rolling Stones recorded some of Willie Dixon's music, too. You mentioned Sonny Boy Williamson. He does a version of the Willie Dixon song, Bring It On Home. Let's hear a little bit of that.
Gonna bring it on home to you. I done bought my ticket. I got my load. Conduct done hollered. All aboard. Take my seat right way back and watch this train move down the track.
Is Sonny Boy Williamson doing a version of Willie Dixon's song Bring It On Home. Both Sonny Boy Williamson and Willie Dixon, part of William Stout's book called Legends of the Blues, which includes a bonus music CD as well. Although the songs we're hearing are not from that CD, how did the songs on the bonus CD come to be attached to this book?
Well, you know, I wanted to include a CD of blues music with the book, but I didn't want to include a typical best of, because that would pretty much end up being a best of Chess Records. So I was lamenting this situation, this problem I had with a friend of mine, Patrick Lee, up in Seattle. And Patrick went back to Seattle, and about 2 weeks later, a huge package arrived in my mailbox and was a gigantic stack of CDs. It was all unreleased live recordings by all these great blues artists. And Patrick said, use whatever you want.
Wow.
And I quickly compiled two huge pack CDs of that. But there were rights issues involved, and made my publisher, Abrams, nervous. And so I contacted Shout Factory. I've had a long relationship with the president of Shout, Richard Foos, going back to his Rhino Records days. And Richard provided me with a list of songs that were public domain that I could use, and I went through that and selected my favorite songs from the list and then sequenced them to make sure there was a real variety to the music, and that's what ended up on the disc.
So Mississippi Fred McDowell and Bucca White and Big Joe Williams, et cetera, on the CD that accompanies the book, Legends of the Blues. Now, Bill, you mentioned before that with the portraits, you didn't want to just, you know, kind of recapitulate photographs that you'd found, but you wanted to say something about each of the artists. Your drawing of Howlin' Wolf shows him, you know, sort of grinning at night with a bat flying in the air behind him. What's going on? What are you telling us about Howlin' Wolf there?
That's a little indication of the sort of hoodoo character that Wolf created around himself, the bigger-than-life Howlin' Wolf. It's indications of the spookiness of some of his music. My favorite blues song is Smokestack Lightning, which is a song he wrote and recorded. And it's amazing at establishing this very thick mood. And the Wolf, he became my favorite story in the book. When I was writing the biographies of each of the blues musicians, there was a common thread there, which was a talented blues musician gets discovered by a record company, gets exploited, and he ends up penniless. Not Howlin' Wolf. Typically, the Chess Brothers up in Chicago, when they wanted to sign an artist, they would present the artist with a brand new Cadillac. The artist would be excited and delighted and not realize that that Cadillac was being paid for by them. It was coming out of their future royalties. They couldn't do that with Howlin' Wolf, though. He was a star in Memphis when they approached him, so he already had his brand new car. And when he arrived in Chicago to negotiate his deal with Chess, he had $4,000 in his pocket, which was unheard of for a blues musician back then. So it put him in a good negotiating position. He was a high school dropout, and so he used the money he got from Chess to finish high school, and then he enrolled in business college because he wanted to be a good businessman so he could hire the best band possible to back him. And he was the first guy to give his band members health care. So, boy, he is the man in my book.
All right, so a guy who really had it together. For all the hoodoo, he knew what he was doing. Howlin' Wolf, and this is William Stout's favorite blues song. It's Howlin' Wolf's Smokestack Lightning.
Oh, Smokestack Lightning, shining just like gold. Why don't you hear me cry? Ooh, ooh, ooh.
The one and only Howlin' Wolf with Smokestack Lightning, a personal favorite of my guest, William Stout, who's with us on Soundcheck. Bill's book is called Legends of the Blues, and each two-page spread gives you Bill's illustration of the artist and then a one-page bio that includes recommended tracks and interesting covers of some of the songs. And Bill, you know, people who know your work as an illustrator, as a designer, will know you from, you know, you've done a fair amount of kind of fantasy, sci-fi stuff, Pan's Labyrinth, Conan the Barbarian, stuff like that. It seems like the blues would be a pretty sharp left turn. Have you always been a blues fan?
I became a blues fan the way most people from my baby boomer generation did, which was through the English blues groups, groups like the Rolling Stones, Manfred Mann, Yardbirds. What I didn't realize as a teenager is they were feeding us back our own music.
Yeah.
And I was a gigantic Yardbirds fan, and I was in the supermarket one day. They had a record bin. I would check through to see if there's anything new, and I found this album. It said Sonny Boy Williamson and the Yardbirds. And I'm like, whoa, what is this? I thought I had every Yardbirds album, and here's one I'd never even heard of. And who was this Sonny Boy Williamson guy? I bought the album, took it home, put it on my cheap little record player, and the music that poured out of my speakers, it felt like this is the music that's been waiting for you all your life. And I was a blues fan ever since, and man, oh man, I was so happy I heard that record, and I think it's just the greatest music ever produced. And it's completely American.
And when we say blues, we can actually mean several different things. I mean, already we've touched on Delta blues with Robert Johnson, and you know, Chicago blues with Howlin' Wolf is from Memphis, but that kind of electric blues associated with Chicago. What about the jump blues and Louis Jordan?
Oh, Louis Jordan, jump blues. Well, one of my favorite jump blues is Tiny Bradshaw's Train Kept a Rollin', which was a Yardbirds LP track. Mm-hmm. Louis Jordan, though, there's an amazing guy. He was the hardest biography to write because my first draft for him was 8 pages long, and I couldn't figure out how to cut it. He is the most accomplished entertainer in the entire book. He's the fifth all-time most successful African-American recording artist and the top black recording artist of all time in terms of total weeks at number one. He had 113 weeks at number one. The only guy who, well, there's no one that even comes close. Second place is Stevie Wonder with just 70.
Wow.
So Louis Jordan, wow, what a guy.
And we're talking about, you know, a guy who crossed over in the middle of the century, 1940s, early 50s.
He was in the right place at the right time. He became popular during World War II, and it was the first time the Army was integrated. And so the black guys in the service would play Louis Jordan's music, and the white guys would hear it and go, wow, who is that? And they started buying the records, and so he benefited from that.
There are a lot of people who point to Jump Blues and to Louis Jordan in particular as really the first example of what would come to be known as rock and roll. Do you agree with that?
Well, Louis Jordan had a song. It was the first song to mention rockin' in the title.
Mm-hmm.
And so he may be credited. Well, actually, it was Saturday Night Fish Fry.
Yeah.
Was the first record to have rocking in the chorus, which makes it a contender for the very first rock and roll record.
This is Louis Jordan with Saturday Night Fish Fry.
If you've ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, you're quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by, stop in at the Saturday Night Fish Fry.
You was rockin'. You was rockin'. You never seen such a comin' and a shovin' till the break of dawn. It was rockin'. It was rockin'.
Now my buddy and me, we fell right in. We hollered, let the joy begin. We figured this was a good place to play, cause the party was already underway. But all of a sudden the lights went low, and everybody made straight for the front door. I was so scared I didn't know where to go. I stood right there and I fell on the floor.
It was rockin'. It was rockin'. You never seen such scuffin' and a shuffin' till the break of dawn.
That is Louis Jordan and Saturday Night Fish Fry, a very strong contender for the title of First Rock Song, a big hit for Louis Jordan, one of many, and he is one of the 100 Legends of the Blues in the new album with bonus music CD by my guest William Stout, who's with us on Soundcheck, and picking even 100 had to have been a difficult thing, even setting aside the earlier bluesmen that R. Crumb had done in his Heroes of the Blues trading cards. Were there names? Who was number 101 and 102 on your list?
Well, there were a lot of musicians whose portraits I had done before I had decided on my 1930 cutoff. Everyone in the book is born prior to 1930. So mm-hmm. I had drawn, say, Buddy Guy and Freddie King. They're not in the book, but hopefully they'll be in what I plan to be my third volume, Modern Legends of the Blues.
Uh-huh. But wait, third volume?
Yeah.
So there's a second volume already done?
Oh, the second volume is half completed. It's called Legends of the British Blues.
Ah, so that'll be like the Stones and the Yardbirds and that kind
Eric
of thing.
Clapton, Jimmy Page, yeah. Peter Green, Fleetwood Mac. Yep.
And so then getting to more modern legends of the blues, who would that list include?
Oh, Jimi Hendrix, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Paul Butterfield, Mike Bloomfield, Otis Taylor, mm-hmm. Jack White of the White Stripes.
Right. So
I want to bring it up to date.
Because the tradition continues right up to this day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The book is called Legends of the Blues by William Stout. And, Bill, it's fun to just kind of surf through or to, you know, drink it all in one fell swoop. Thanks very much for sharing some of it with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And you can see a slideshow of some of William Stout's portraits from his book Legends of the Blues. It's on our website, soundcheck.org. This Memorial Day weekend, spend an hour with Soundcheck and Steve Martin. Head to soundcheck.org for a special podcast featuring recent visits from the comedian and Grammy-winning banjo player. You can hear Steve Martin play with the Steep Canyon Rangers and with his friend, the singer-songwriter Edie Brickell. Plus, he'll give us a banjo history lesson. It's our Memorial Day weekend special with Steve Martin. You can stream or download the podcast right now at soundcheck.org.